Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody out there. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Tonight, we got Dr. Charles Parker in the house. We're going to be talking about ADHD prescription rules, paying attention to the meds for paying attention. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is November the 9th in the year 2011 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are on the eve of the start of the CHAD conference, which is being held 100 miles up the road from me in Tampa. Actually, it's in Orlando. I'm in Tampa. Which will be starting tomorrow. I know that I'm going to get rid of the done with the show tonight. Tomorrow, I'll get up, work with a couple clients, and jump in my car there. If you haven't booked a ticket or on an airplane or in a car, and you're in the area, go to chadd.org. I encourage you to check it out. It's going to be a great conference, and I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of old friends and some of our listeners out there. A few other announcements before we get into tonight's fascinating conversation. As a reminder, everybody, we got a Facebook page at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio, and we are upscaling things here a little bit. We've got a little contest that's kind of going out there. If you go to facebook.com/attentiontalkradio, and on the left on the tab, click on advertisers and giveaways. We're actually raffling off a $50 gift card to iTunes right now. We're taking entries up to December the 1st, and we will do a drawing and send the code to the winner to download. There's no purchase that's necessary for this. So if you're interested, please exercise your right and go do that stuff. We are trying to collect some demographic information on some of our listeners, but please go and tell your friends about it. I just tell them about the contest, but actually tell everybody about our show. Let's see, is there anything else? I think that's it. Again, tonight we've got Dr. Charles Parker in our virtual studio. Dr. Parker is the medical director of CoreSight, which provides both personal consultation and professional training to address the main challenges present in psychiatry today. Dr. Parker teaches new science understanding to patients, the public, medical colleagues, neuroscience, and practices child and adult psychiatrists. Psychiatry. He's a prolific writer. He's got a book called Deep Recovery that was done back in 1992, but particularly of interest is the book that he just released, ADHD Medication Rules, Paying Attention to the Meds for Paying Attention, which we're going to talk about tonight. Dr. Parker's a prolific writer, got lots of information. We'll talk about it later, but you can find out more information if you go to CoreSight, that's CoreSight blog.com. With that, Dr. Parker, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
As I talked about last week, because we had Dr. Parker on last week, I've been dying to do the show for over 15 months, finally found you as the perfect guest, and I'm really excited about tonight. And last week when we were kind of getting ready for the show, you talked about a concept of the mouth to the south. In other words, you take medications, they go through your mouth, and they go south, and we kind of alluded to, you know, the body having to interact with these medications. And what I'd like to do with tonight's show is kind of do this a little backwards. Typically, we talk about the high level and kind of work our way down. Tonight, I want to talk about some of the details a little bit, the mouth to the south concept, and then work our way back up to a global type thing. So last week, when you said mouth to the south, what were you referring to?
Well, the big picture is, and it's just amazing. It's to me, it's completely, I'm saying this about myself as much as I'm saying about anybody else, that we don't think about the fact that when a person takes a medication, it actually has to go through the body to get to the mind. Now, you know, and if you don't really know what's going on with the body or what the medication should do in the first place, in terms of what's expected to do, then what's going to happen is any of the influences that the body can have on the medication are completely disregarded. And as a result, meds become completely are very frequently significantly unpredictable. One of the things that's going on with stimulant medications is, and they do get a lot of bad rap because they look like they're unpredictable, whereas if you know what's going on with the body, then you can make them far more predictable.
What are some of the things in the body that influences it?
Well, one of the things with the mouth of the South, and it's a joke, but it's not a joke. It's so real. So often we ask people to actually do their transit time. I've written extensively about the transit time on my blog. I kind of got into it, if you forgive the expression, in the back door by looking at gluten sensitivity and casein sensitivity, because we've been seeing people that have been having food allergy problems and having significant presentations with attention deficit disorder related to the food allergies. And then we started really looking more and more at the literature, and what happens is there's a specific transit time that food should take from the mouth to the south.
Mm-hmm.
So if you eat corn and you look at your watch and then you see when it passes, that's the transit time. Should be 18 mm-hmm. to 24 hours.
Okay.
Now, some say it should be 12 to 18 hours. There's a debate going on, but what we use in our office quite effectively is the 18 to 24-hour model. Now,
mm-hmm.
what happens is there are so many people that say, "Doctor, what are you asking me that stupid question for? I mean, who cares about my – you're a psychiatrist. Why are you asking me
yep.
about my bowel movements?" Well, it's very simple, because a person can say – they'll tell me, I had a construction guy in. He says, "Look, I go to the bathroom every day. I've gone every day since I was a kid. I go every day. It's not a problem, Parker. What are you talking about?" Bottom line is, we did the mouth of the south with him under some duress. I didn't do it. He did it. 10 days from the mouth to the south.
Wow.
So his transit time was, you know, whatever, 240 hours. You know, and what happened was he was completely toxic. The meds were bouncing off of him. He had what I call a bulletproof liver. Any medications that we give, which is another body principle,
uh-huh.
we're giving medications that are going to go to the mind, but they got to go through the gut. They got to go through the gut wall. They've got to go through the liver. They got to go through the bloodstream, through the blood-brain barrier, and up to the mind that way. I mean, it's just a quick summary.
And so
each one of those can be a problem.
And so just what I'm hearing is that you take the medication, it's got to go through all these systems and all this stuff before it actually kind of gets to your brain. And when you say the transit time, if it's taking him longer, how does that impact the medication? Does it delay the progress or its path to kind of get there so it doesn't actually make it?
That's a good question. Well, it can harm the process in two ways. If it's too short, it can harm the process. If it's too long, it can harm the process.
Wow.
So what happens is it messes with the actual gut physiology.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, the cells on the inside that are lining the gut, the columnar epithelium,
uh-huh.
become, you know, rusty and broken. They don't
mm-hmm.
work as well, so you suffer from a relative neurotransmitter malnutrition. So, you know, I frequently refer to the chickens in the ranch. I mean, basically the neurotransmitters are what we're modifying in the brain when we give people medication. So if a person doesn't have sufficient neurotransmitters in the first place,
uh-huh.
but we're sending in medications to collect neurotransmitters, I use the chicken catching metaphor. So if there are no chickens in the ranch and we're sending in chicken catchers, they're going to come out empty-handed, and the medicines aren't going to work. Well, why would they not have any chickens in the ranch? Well, because they got a transit time of 4 days, or they go to the bathroom once a week. I had a woman recently who went to the bathroom one time every 3 weeks.
Wow.
Guess what? Her medications didn't work. They
wow.
would absolutely not work. And she had a long history of medications not working.
So it's
a simple question.
Yeah, so to kind of boil this down a little bit, what I'm hearing you say is that there, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm just trying to move it into layman's terms, more layman's terms, is your absorption rate and this kind of stuff is your digestive tract and what you're eating has an impact on how these things are actually being absorbed and what actually makes it to your brain or not?
Absolutely. That is the point. And so just to take a little bit further, the neurotransmitters
mm-hmm.
are predominantly born from amino acids and proteins.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person doesn't take enough protein in, it's one of the reasons I'm a strong advocate and talk regularly and have written exceedingly, you know, quite a bit about protein breakfast, because if
mm-hmm.
they don't take a protein breakfast, they're not putting the neurotransmitters in there. And these neurotransmitters have a half-life, so
mm-hmm.
they only live for a certain period of time. They're not in there forever.
Uh-huh.
So if you're not feeding the pipeline of the neurotransmitters, and yet you're throwing chicken catchers in,
yep.
it's simply not going to work. And, so the bowel has a problem. There's a problem with the bowel, but then there's the other problem is the micronutrients are not there that actually facilitate the protein turning into a neurotransmitter. So it's not only the neurotransmitter precursors, but it's the micronutrients that develop the neurotransmitter itself from the precursors. So there are just many, many layers. I said I used to be a synaptic person, but now I'm a synaptic, presynaptic, extrasynaptic.
And here's the thing out there. Everybody out there who might be like, wow, what is all this? I think where we're going is our point here is, and we're going to talk about a couple other things, is that the getting ADD meds right is an art, not a science, and there's a lot of factors that are at play here, and we're going to try to educate you tonight on how this stuff all works, because we're going to work our way back up to the typical doctor visit is they give you stimulus, you walk in, and their question is, how do you feel? And you give some broad answer, and we want you to realize it's give you a language. There's a lot more that's at play right here in order to get this stuff right. So, again, I'm just offering out there because I think that's where we're going tonight, and what I'm hearing right now is we got diet a little bit that's involved here. We have your digestive system that's a little bit involved here. And also, Dr. Parker, is the immune system involved?
Well, absolutely. The immune system is one of the most overlooked subsets of the entire body system that's going on. So what happens is if a person, as I was mentioning before briefly, is allergic to wheat or milk,
mm-hmm.
and the proteins in milk, the milk protein is casein, the wheat protein is gluten. If they're allergic to those, just as an example,
mm-hmm.
then what happens is the bowel becomes inflamed, just as if you've got chronic poison ivy of the gut. But you don't feel it, so you don't know that you have that problem.
Uh-huh.
So they're relatively asymptomatic. So they're seeing everybody and nothing's working. They may have a transit time that's obviously wrong, so they're going to the bathroom once or twice a week. But a lot of people say, well, that's not a problem. You can live with that because it's not an acute problem. It's a chronic problem. So then what happens is when we actually measure them,
mm-hmm.
we measure IgG quite frequently, I mean many times a day,
mm-hmm.
and we have, I see it so frequently, I call it the New Jersey trifecta. You know, a trifecta is when the horses come in a predictable
yep,
order.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, with me, it's wheat, eggs, pardon me, correction, I said that wrong. It's milk, eggs, and wheat. Wheat is last. By far the most prominent allergen in the diets and the people that we see who are corrupted and have inadequate reactions to medications. Milk is by far the most frequent one that we see, no question
about
it.
Wow. Dr. Parker, I want to run to a commercial break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit also about a person's metabolism and how that influences the medications. But before we go to break, again, we talked about this last week. If anybody would like to learn more about Dr. Parker, certainly participate in the blogs or even order his book, all of his books, but specifically the recent book, which is the topic tonight, ADHD Medication Rules, Paying Attention to the Meds for Paying Attention. The place to go is CorePsychBlog.com, which is CorePsychBlog.com. Is that correct?
It's a little complicated, yeah. Yeah. Actually, yeah, and Core Brain is another connection. And actually, we've got the book is now on digital at Kindle, and it's going to soon be up at Nook and some of the other digital. It's going to be at all the digital sites.
So you can find it everywhere.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to run to a break, and we'll come back, and we're going to pick up and start talking about metabolism.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions, and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and, of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Has your child been diagnosed with ADHD? Is he not fulfilling his potential? Success in Mind can help. We provide assessments that identify a student's learning profile of strengths and challenges. The result? A practical plan of strategies and tools that go beyond medication that parents, teachers, and students can implement together. If your child needs more success, visit Success in Mind at www.success-in-mind.org.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
News, updates, and alerts sent right to your inbox. Sign up now at attentionradio.com.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. We've got Dr. Charles Parker in the house. We're actually paying attention to the meds that help you pay attention. Before the break, we started in the details tonight, which is a little opposite of how we do this, but the idea was we wanted to kind of illustrate that there's an art to prescribing the right meds here, and we're going to work up to kind of a big picture. And so far we've talked about diet and the system of processing things, the immune system, converting proteins and stuff, which honestly sometimes I think is a little bit over my head, but I'm starting to realize the complexity that's involved here, and it's just not as simple as writing a prescription and being done, which is really the whole point of today's show. Building on what we've got so far, Dr. Parker, metabolism, doesn't that impact ADHD meds as well?
It sure does. And Jeff, before you go another question further, I just want to tell you thanks so much for having me on this presentation. I think you do a great job of asking the questions. You're obviously very interested in the subject, and I just love the way you formulate the whole thing, and you make it easy for the person.
Well, hey, I appreciate it, but this is a blast for me, and it's funny because I will tell you that as I said, I've wanted to have somebody speaking this topic on the show for a long time, because I can't tell you how many people I coach who go out and get a script, try it for 2 months, and say it didn't work or I had a problem, and they abandon it. I'm like, wait a second, you don't really have the education. This is not that simple. And the fact that you're willing to kind of come on so we can educate the people, my hope is that people will actually realize this is difficult, and when they walk into their mental health professional, they're just not going to get the drive-by, how you feeling, okay, good, or, you know, whatever, and give up. So I thank you for coming on the show to kind of help provide the education.
Well, and I'm totally with you. I think an educated consumer group is going to change medicine in the United States. I mean, I've been lecturing to my physician colleagues, mentioning this to serious Ivy League professionals, I won't mention the schools, since 96. And my answer from them has always been, it's not in the literature. Well, you're not reading the right literature, because it's all over in the literature. You know, I quote the literature repeatedly in core psych. So the bottom line is back to the metabolic question. Now, there are two issues. You know, we started talking about the transit time and the columnar epithelium in the bowel. It's really the poison ivy of the bowel. All those things can corrupt the system. But metabolism has two other key points. If a person has an immune system dysregulation or a challenged bowel system or a challenged digestive system in some way, the liver plays catch-up ball for what the bowel isn't doing correctly. So it's sort of the second-level sewage treatment plan when the bowel isn't working right.
Mm-hmm.
So then the bowel, if it's slow or fast, doesn't matter, can actually throw the liver into a relative state of constipation. Now, it's not constipated per se, because your doctor will do a liver test to say your liver looks great. You know, what he means, what he's really saying is your liver cells aren't dying and you don't have an overt acute pathology.
Mm-hmm.
But from a chronic point of view, from a long-term point of view, you could still have a relative bulletproof liver, because if the liver isn't working properly, the meds won't be metabolized through quickly. They will build up, they accumulate. And there's a phenomenon called the roving therapeutic window that I've developed. It comes up out of this whole thing. A roving therapeutic window is as follows. We're looking for a therapeutic window with stimulant medications. Therapeutic window is really simple. It's just like any window. What we want is we want the patient in the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
Not above the window where it's too much,
yep.
Not below the window where it's not working, not outside the sides because we want the duration to be exactly as it should be for that specific medication.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's described in ADHD medication rules in detail.
Sure.
So we want them right in that. We want them right in that sweet spot.
So
now the sweet spot will move. I mean, what will happen is the window itself will move, and the sweet spot, their dosage will remain the same, is what I'm really trying to say. But the window will move,
okay,
because of the metabolic background noise. So then here they are in the sweet spot. Another week down the road, the window has moved, and now they're at the bottom below the window, and it's not working. Or 2 or 3 weeks later, it's above the window, and they're like, I can't get this medicine right, and they're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars and time and hours and lost time
yep.
from work running around getting their medication adjusted when the problem is the roving therapeutic window based on metabolism related to the body having nothing to do with the medication in the brain.
So let me ask you a question, just to take that and kind of use a metaphor. I've coached a couple of people who have kids, and they've been on medication over a period of time, and they go out and it's kind of working good, and then all of a sudden the kid starts a sport, like maybe swimming or soccer or something like that, and all of a sudden the parents start to report to me that the kid's meds, it's like things start to wear off earlier in the day. Does exercise, because your metabolism is that you got this roving window that's kind of moving back and forth. So just when I think of metabolism, I think about, like, you know, the body processing stuff. Can things like, you know, you're going along every day and then all of a sudden you get involved in a sport and your body actually metabolizes stuff so that you would actually wear through the drug earlier in the day than you normally would?
Yeah, absolutely. It happens all the time.
So
yeah.
you could this is another example of how this is an art, not a science, because you get the meds right in a certain thing, and something as simple as all of a sudden you start to exercise more or less than what you did, and it can actually impact the impact of the stimulants to your body because of the way it's being absorbed.
Now, I want to catch you on one thing, Jeff.
Okay.
We're becoming friends here, and I really appreciate having this chance to talk to you, but I want to slip in one little correction with you very
quickly. No, please. I'm not an expert, so
you are. I think you are very knowledgeable about this. But I want to have you reframe what you're saying.
Okay.
Because I want our audience to think about it collectively. It is a science. It's not an art.
Okay.
If we really think about the science, the whole situation becomes not so artistic and not so creative. It becomes predictable.
Okay.
Now, maybe it's an art and a science. Maybe that's the correct way to say it, because there's a certain measure of when you know all the variables, putting them together in a certain level of action, that there's a certain measure of art with it. But the science is the thing that I really want to emphasize, because if you know the science, and all this is measurable with laboratory data. I mean, you can test people to find out. One of the other problems that comes up with metabolic differences is the fact, and this is not commonly appreciated, it's amazing to me because these medications have been in common use since the early 90s, even before that, but I mean very common use since the early 90s, and that is that the liver pathways have genetically different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is the one main pathway that the amphetamines run up through has documented different sizes, different pipeline
mm-hmm.
sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you can have a very wide pipeline, which would be a very rapid metabolizer because you have to throw a lot of stuff in there to make it work correctly. Or you could have a very narrow pipeline and only a little bit could make you have to be careful and use only a little bit because any larger amount would make you toxic. It would accumulate too quickly because of the narrow pipeline.
So I'm glad you corrected me here, because as I'm thinking about it, is we're starting to get science that this is – we're getting more science that this is scientific. And, you know, last week we talked about you know, like the education of the people that are out there, and it's really trying to catch up to some of this stuff. So in a sense, I kind of appreciate you bringing this to my attention, because I can see how it's a science. You just have to understand the science.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm being careful about it because I think you're saying what a lot of people do think, and that's one of the reasons You know, I did bring it up because you actually,
yep.
I was counting.
Yep.
You said it a couple times. I let it go. I said,
yep.
I just let it go. But when you said it the third time, I was like, we should really just make sure we get this straight with our audience, because that's what the audience is listening for, in my opinion. They're listening,
yep.
for factual material that was predictable, that will make these medicines understandable, as opposed to throw it against the wall and see what happens.
So what I want to do is we've been talking about, you know, diet, the metabolism, immune system, all that kind of stuff, in a lot of detail type stuff thus far in our conversation. I need to go to a break again, but when we come back, I'm going to start kind of moving up, because we talked about the therapeutic window, which is you know, balancing all this kind of stuff, because we're ultimately going to talk about, you know, the right medication and stuff, and getting everything kind of like, you know, in sync. Again, just a repeat for those that are interested in learning about Dr. Parker, if you go to CoreSysBlog.com, that's CoreSysBlog.com, you can learn more about him, order his book, and go from there, and we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention@attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got Dr. Charles Parker. We're having a great conversation about ADHD meds. Dr. Parker, in your writing, you talk about the therapeutic window. We've talked about it a little bit before, and we've talked about the details a lot so far to kind of frame this stuff out, how you can get outside of that window. When we're starting to look at that window, you can go, it's kind of like the Goldilocks thing, a little too hot, a little too cold.
Yep.
Can you speak to that a little bit about that like the therapeutic window, and maybe even how does a person know that they're on one side, they're outside of that window?
Good question. Well, first of all, the window, one of the big things with stimulant medications, which is the hot topic that we're into, is the fact that the stimulant medications don't last 24 hours. So they have a certain measure of time,
mm-hmm.
that they work. And once you know what that medication time is, your doctor should tell you. And if you don't, if he doesn't tell you, you can look it up on the internet. You can, you know, there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of literature out there, but you want to know what it is. So if you're getting immediate release Ritalin, it should last somewhere in the 4 to 5 hour range. It's very
okay.
unlikely it's going to last 6. If it's lasting 6, then it's actually stretching that window too far, and you're probably going to be coming out the top of the window because the dose is too high and it's actually lasting too long. So on the other hand, if you have a dose of Ritalin, let's say they're getting 5 milligrams and it only lasts for 2 hours, then and it's expected to last 4 or 5, then you know that you've got to go up in a certain, very measurable, careful way to get it up to the duration, expected duration of effectiveness. And so just knowing that's important. So, I mean, it happens several times today. I get new people coming in. I just see a lot of new people in the practice, and they come in. And, you know, you have a child, you know, 10-year-old boy. One comes that I saw today. I said, one comes to mind from today. I said, well, let me ask you. You're taking the medication. Basically, he was taking Concerta. I said, when do you take it? How long does it last? He says, well, I don't know. I said, well, let's, you know, of course, and he's been on medication since he was, you know, like in the second grade.
Mm-hmm.
So he has no idea what the medication is doing. Now, I can talk to his mother about it, but as soon as I talk to his mother, he's out of the loop.
Uh-huh.
And he's not even thinking about what it should be doing. Whereas if I hold him accountable and get him to be responsibly paying attention to his medication, then he and I are our treatment
yep.
partners, even though he's a doggone 10-year-old kid.
Uh-huh.
And I tell him, as long as I can talk to you, somewhere around 6 or 7 it gets a little hard, but But 10-year-old kids, totally capable, most of them, not every one of them, are able to come up with that. So then I told him, and this is now answering your question. When it stops working differently for different medications. Now, one of the things that happens is they can crash very profoundly. I call it the Wile E. Coyote effect in the afternoon. You know, you got the Roadrunner taking a hard beep, beep, right? Wile E goes down in the canyon. And, you know, about 3 or 4 o'clock, they hit the thing. They're depressed. They're irritable. They want to throw a chair. And the medication was great in school all day, but the whole evening is shot because they've had that Wile E. Coyote effect.
Okay.
Now, that's a very obvious drop out of it. With Vyvanse and some of the longer-acting medications that are like Vyvanse is a prodrug, so its release is not so profound. It's actually being metabolized in the red blood cells. That's a whole other thing I wouldn't get into, but it's pretty doggone interesting. But the bottom line is it comes in very slowly, and it goes out very slowly. So you, people are like, I don't really know when it stopped working. Well, the reason it's hard to see that in Vyvanse as opposed to the other medications is because the other medications have a mechanical release. They come out of the system based on the fact that they're going through the gut. They don't have this other metabolic release, so they drop rather precipitously. So what do you look for in Vyvanse? You don't look for a somatic, a physical effect. You look for a mental effect. Now, what's the mental effect that you're looking for? Well, this is where I get into the whole thing that we talked about last week, establishing clear brain function targets. If we don't have clear brain function targets and we're shooting at amorphous targets like hyperactivity and inattention, how can you tell when inattention stops and starts? And, you know, you almost have to have, like, complete obvious inattention for you to really know that you have no longer have inattention. Whereas with, and it's the same thing with hyperactivity. Where does hyperactivity begin and end? It's a pretty cloudy target. So the question would be with Vyvanse, for example, when is the target change? When is the actual objective change? So if you're looking at worrying, fretting, analyzing, double, triple, quadruple thinking as a cognitive anxiety target, it should be out of the picture, and then when you start worrying again in the evening, that's a totally mental cognitive presentation that you have to ask about. You have to ask precisely about it as opposed to saying, well, is it working or is it not working? Well, the patient doesn't know this. The patients need to know this. Why I so much appreciate being on the show with you here, because if the people know that, it's all pretty basic after that. It's like common sense.
Yeah, so and that's we're on the same page here, because part of today is to go through these details a little bit. So the idea is you need to notice kind of what's going on in your day so that you can articulate this back to the mental health professional in order to kind of get some things right. And what I'm kind of hearing you say is if you're getting that Wile E. Coyote feeling very early in the day before the meds are kind of wearing off, you need to report that back to the mental health professional, right?
Absolutely, yeah. That's an insufficient duration of effectiveness, yeah.
And what would be a sign that you're getting too much medication?
Well, coming out the top of the window is different for the main two medications. With amphetamines, most often when a person's coming out the top of the window, they're crabby, they're irritable, they're touchy, they're angry, they're probably talking too fast, they've got a million things going on, you know what I'm saying? Like that. And what happens with Ritalin and methylphenidate products, Concerta, Ritalin LA, they tend to feel stoned. So you see kids come in all the time who and I say to them, well, how do you feel? I just feel stoned. I can't take this medication. Well, they've been telling their doctor that, but their doctor feels like, well, it's covered the behavior because hyperactivity was the target. They're not paying attention to the cognitive mental part of the whole thing. So the kid is stoned, completely counterproductively stoned on the medication. But we're solving the behavioral problem, so who cares?
Yep.
I mean, this is complete, makes me crazy. I mean, I definitely get upset about that.
So there's, if everybody out there, if you're listening to this and you're dealing with medications and you're feeling something's out of whack or you're feeling this stuff, this is the stuff to go back to your doctor and explain to what's kind of going on and ask them some questions and kind of probe a little bit to try to get this stuff right. And because...
because there are a lot of stuff that affect it. And the more clues you give back to them, the higher the probability that we're going to get you back into that therapeutic window so that you can optimize what's working to make it work the way it's supposed to.
That is exactly the point. That is exactly the point. And just a little bit of thinking about it, you're an expert. It doesn't really take a whole lot. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the public. I mean, you know this as a coach.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we rely heavily on coaches. I got some great coaches that I work with, and I mean, we think they do a great job. What do they do? What do a lot of coaches do? They do exactly what you're talking to me about right now, Jeff. This is the way the medication should work.
Now we have different classifications of drugs. So some drugs work. I mean, drugs work differently in different people. Is that accurate too?
Absolutely.
So you've got these two different kind of classifications. Can you talk to those a little bit to kind of your people, like, you know, just a little bit of an idea how that works so that they, because you've got you got the Ritalin on one side and it's more the Adderall type stuff on the other. Is that, am I off?
The Adderall Vyvanse on the one side, Adderall Dexedrine Vyvanse on the one side, Ritalin Methylphenidate Concerta on this side. And again, the top of the window is different in each one of them. It isn't always this way, but we're speaking in generalities.
Yep.
The methylphenidate overdose, where they're really coming out the top of the window, they're stoned and they're just not thinking and they can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
The Adderall, when they're really too much, you know, let's say they have another phenomenon, is not the roving therapeutic window, but the narrow therapeutic window. This is another important point about paying attention to metabolism and getting the dose right. But a narrow therapeutic window, you bring it up slowly like your Adderall 20 milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but it's not quite right, doctor. My duration of effectiveness is around 2 in the afternoon. I take it at 7. 5 hours, which 7 to 12 is 5, and 2 hours is 7. 2 and 5 is 7. I really want to get 8 or 9 hours out of it, maybe 10. So I want to go up from 20 to 25. Now, one would think they should be able to go from 20 to 25 with a 7-hour burn on what would be expected to be a 9 or 10-hour medication.
Mm-hmm.
And you go from 20 to 25, boom, they're blown out the top, they're agitated, they can't stand it, and they're angry all the time and they want to throw chairs. Well, what's that? That's a narrow therapeutic window. You can't hit the sweet spot because they have such big metabolic background noise that the medication is unpredictable. And then in that situation, that's a overt coming out the top on an amphetamine product. But the reason they did is because of the metabolic background noise, not because of the amphetamine product. But amphetamine products become looked at as, you know, terrible, terrible things because they have that particular characteristic when they go out the top. One of the reasons people love methylphenidate products, which are not as efficacious, they don't work as well as amphetamine products, is because they're more forgiving on the top of the window. So when they come, instead of coming out the top, they just get stoned, they don't do anything, and so nobody has a problem with them. But they're really not thinking about the patient when they're operating under that kind of, you know, cookie-cutter mentality.
So for our listeners out there, again, we're just kind of building on this. You're starting to see how important it is for you to be aware of how you're feeling and what's going on to articulate it back so that when you go out and you see you get diagnosed or you get the stimulant medication the first time, is that you don't give up on the process as you go back and you communicate back to your mental health professional to work with them to get it right.
Absolutely. And I mean, no disrespect to anybody, but this, what I'm saying right here, is not commonly appreciated throughout the United States, I can tell you with great certainty. So you may surprise your mental health professional, your psychiatrist, your family practitioner, your pediatrician. They may not get it when you say it the first time because, in fact, they may say this is baloney.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, from having done this wrong thousands of times, I've done it wrong more than anybody I know. Okay. So, and the way I got so opinionated is by getting it wrong numerous times and asking myself the question, how did I get that one wrong when I thought I was getting it right?
That's hilarious. I have a right to be opinionated because I got it wrong so many times.
Absolutely. I mean, where do you get experience? You don't get experience by getting it right, I'll tell you that.
Two little things I want to ask kind of lead into this before we kind of get to the ultimate big picture question. That is, side effects are important too, right? articulate.
Absolutely. Side effects are a key parameter for really – they're really the window into whether you're using the medication effectively, in my opinion.
So
side effects tell the whole story.
Sleep and diet and irritability and all that type of stuff, you need to be conscious that these are still things you need to be conscious of to talk about, because they're still part and parcel to the whole thing. Are they getting absorbed right?
Side
are they going through?
Are my friends. If I'm cruising off the coast of Maine with a sailboat and the fog's coming in, I want to see a channel marker one way or another. And side effects are channel markers.
Okay.
I don't want to go into the rocks because I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yep.
I look at that side effect, and I give it some merit, and I think about it in the context of what's going on in the reality of that person's life. And that side effect helps me change what I'm doing. I take the lesson from my friend, the side effect, and I think more deeply about what's going on, change the deal, and it's all corrected.
Excellent. I got one more just tactical question before we get to the big picture question, and that is, I've always been curious. People have said that sometimes those with ADD, if you give them a stimulant before they go to bed, it actually helps them sleep. Is that fact, fiction, myth?
No, that does happen in a certain percentage. I think that people say that it happens far more frequently than it really happens in my practice, for example. I think what happens is they're treating the unmanageable cognitive abundance with a stimulant, and I don't think that's really the way to treat unmanageable cognitive abundance at nighttime. I think it's – my own feeling is I've written it for maybe less than 1%. I mean, less than 1 in 100 I do that for. And it's just because they insist on it and they say it really works. I'm like, hey, I can't understand the neurophysiology of it, but I'll do it for you. But what I want to do is get them to sleep in a proper way, honoring that whole sleep system and all the neurotransmitters involved with the sleep cycle and the diurnal rhythm, rather than using something to help their working memory so that they can actually sleep.
Mm.
Because it is a stimulant, and yet, honestly, there are some people that actually unpredictably sleep well with it. So if somebody insists on it, yes, I'm going to work with them, because my deal is to serve them as a medical professional, even though my theory doesn't make sense in that situation.
Sure. So for everybody out there who's been hanging with us, we got into the details. Usually we start at the high level and work down, but today we did a little bit backwards. So we covered an enormous amount of material, but working our way all up, I wanted to build up to the big picture question, and that is, when you get the diagnosis and you go in and you've been prescribed the stimulants, and you walk into the doctor's office, and they ask you that question, how you doing?
Yeah.
And that, I'm okay. That is such a high level. That is such a vague question. There's not really a lot of communication that's going back and forth that's taking place there. And what I'm hoping is that today opened your eyes to pay attention to what's going on in your world. So you, when the doctor says, how's it going, you can actually say, well, I'm not so sure. I'm in my therapeutic window. I'm inside. I'm outside. Maybe and you engage your mental health professional in a conversation to serve yourself and not give up that maybe it's not right the first time. Adjustments need to be made based off of who you individually are to make this thing work.
I think that's very well said, Jeff. I think that one of the reasons that I'm, have written the book and love talking about this to the public is because if they actually have the dialogue within themselves of conceptually what they're trying to accomplish themselves, and they use that language base, it invites the medical professional to come over and join with them on that language, on that conceptual base, rather than just saying, I'm fine or I'm doing okay, I'll talk to you later, and keeping it amorphous and clouded and inadequate, really. So, that's why I love the therapeutic window, because honestly, there are very few physicians, very, very few, unless they absolutely can't stand what they're doing, hate treating ADD, and they're just doing it for whatever reasons, which you shouldn't be seeing them in the first place if that's the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, if you say therapeutic window to 99% of the physicians, you're gonna get their attention on that remark. They're gonna be like, "Dang, that's an interesting concept, therapeutic window." Yeah. Well,
yep.
I'm not coming out the top. My duration is just about right, and I'm not in the bottom. I think I'm pretty well in the sweet spot. The average physician who almost knows nothing about it will be drawn into that conversation and start having, a conversation about the details. If they have any time at all, that's a whole other question. But, I mean, if they're interested at all, the average physician, in my opinion, and that's most physicians, high number, they're going to get drawn in that conversation, and you're going to have a productive thing, and it's going to help them understand what they need to be asking you without you telling them, you should be asking me this.
And
they don't want to hear that.
And as a coach, everybody out there, I can tell you, I hope you can understand why this was such a big topic to me, because people come to me, I have no license doing this stuff. I'm just about moving people forward, but so many times they'll try some medications, and I'm asking, well, how do you feel? What's going on? And my sole job is to help them articulate it so they can go in and get it right, because too many times people say, well, I took the medications for, 2 months, and I was anxious or whatever. They didn't really kind of give it a chance because they didn't make the adjustments, or they said, I took it for a period of time, and it doesn't work anymore, and they just kind of abandon it. And it's to say that, sometimes it can really help, sometimes it can't. But the bottom line is you got to take ownership, because the doctors don't know how you feel. They don't know what's going on. You have to help them understand what's going on in your body and articulate it. And this show today was hopefully to kind of give you a little bit of an education to help you articulate some stuff and actually start to have a conversation with your mental health professional to optimize your ability to move forward.
Well, just one final thing. You mentioned there is one other key question that comes up, and somebody says it's not working. The next question that needs to come from the medical professional are from you in asking yourself about what it is that's not working, is you have to insert the concept of time with stimulant medications. Time is the variable that almost nobody's paying attention to, and time is the most essential variable. And so then when it's not working, it's like, when is it not working? Is it not working from the beginning of the day all the way through the day, or is it not working from 2 o'clock in the afternoon on? Well, that's two different outcomes.
Yep.
If it's not working from 2 on, you had a good hit for a certain duration of effectiveness. It just wasn't dialed in correctly.
Uh-huh.
If it wasn't working from the beginning of the day all the way through, the dose was inadequate right from the beginning. If it wasn't working and you kept increasing the dose and nothing ever happened, you probably have a serious metabolic problem of some kind, and the whole thing is completely out the window, because the therapeutic window is so abrogated by the metabolic challenges that you can't get it right in the first place. So there are a lot of reasons the medication doesn't work right.
Everybody, the book out there is ADHD Medication Rules, Paying Attention to the Meds for Paying Attention. We covered a fraction of the book. We got a pretty high overview of what's going on, but if you've been interested in this conversation, you've been stimulated, I encourage you to go to coursesiteblog.com and purchase the book and learn more about Dr. Parker. With that, Dr. Parker, I can't tell you, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I've been dying to have you. You did a great
Look
job.
Look forward to meeting you down
and, we'll have to get you back in on the show sometime in the future.
I appreciate it.
Everybody else, we got another great edition of Attention Talk Radio next week, and if you're going to go to the CHAD conference, please look at me. I'm going to be trying to walk around in a blue blazer, and either a blue or a bright kind of orange is short, so you can find me. So with that, we'll catch you next week.